Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Money makes the world go round, but the lack of money could force the state to a screeching halt or at least cost it even more down the road. If something isn't done to address the projected $851 million budget shortfall created when the Ohio Supreme Court put the kibosh on the governor's plan to place thousands of slot machines at racetracks. They said it was subject to a referendum that can't take place before November 2010, so joining us in the studio today to discuss the ramifications of this sudden shortfall is Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
And Bill Hershey of the Dayton Daily News. Welcome, Bill.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
And also Bill Cohen of Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Thanks
Hello.
For being here. Governor Strickland said, I think it was the week before last, that we're out of options. Let's hear exactly what he said at
the
that
The choice
point.
Is clear. We can cut education, raise taxes, or postpone the last phase of the income tax rate reduction. Postponing the income tax reduction is my recommended solution.
Okay, I take that back. We're not out of options. We can cut the budget, $851 million more or whatever, or we can raise taxes, or we can postpone the tax cut that was supposed to take effect on January 1st. Bill, where are we now with it? What kind of timeline are we looking at?
Well, things are really screwed up. This is really the now we're talking about a two-year budget. We just started this two-year budget 3 or 4 months ago. So you can argue they don't need to do anything right now. I mean, they can wait a few more months, of course. If they're going to do cuts to solve this $851 million mess, then the longer they wait, the more severe the cuts have to be. On the other hand, if they move fairly quickly on the governor's proposal, they can plug this $850 million shortfall by not having this last 4.2% cut in the state income tax. And remarkably, four business groups that you might think would be against this, because they generally lean conservative, they've said, well, this is the best of a bunch of bad options.
It's been put this way that they're grudgingly supporting him in this. What do they mean by grudgingly, meaning they usually don't and therefore
right.
they don't have any other ideas?
Yeah, they'd rather not have any kind of tax hikes. But, of course, they know if they don't have this delay in the income tax cut, they could get hit with an even worse tax hike, a more blatant tax hike like a sales tax or maybe the business tax, the new CAT tax might be raised on them. So they say, better to delay this last cut in the personal income tax.
And they're putting provisos in their support. The Ohio Chamber of Commerce said, well, this is the best of a lot of bad things. But if we do this, we have to put in some kind of trigger that this fifth year of tax cuts would start if something happens. And this is a way to kind of say we're for it, but we're not really for it in the long run.
The trigger meaning that it would cease
fifth year would start when measures occur, I guess when the economy starts booming again.
And speaking of the economy starting to boom again, we have some new estimates.
We do.
Kathy?
We have some September tax revenues figures are in, and the state of Ohio is 12%, collected 12% less in September this year than it did in September last year. And, of course, September in last year was down too. So the situation doesn't look like it's going to improve anytime soon. So they have to take that into consideration. But 2 points I'd like to make about the proposal, Governor Strickland's proposal. One is, you know, it's really the least painful of the solutions being discussed. And I say that because there was a poll out in the summer, maybe late spring, that only 8% of Ohioans even knew there was a tax, their income taxes had been cut. So most people are unaware that, you know, this is even happening and are unaware that they're not going to, reap the benefit of it. So I do think it's the least painful. But that said, we're getting close to another election, and the political ramifications here are pretty obvious. You know, do you favor a tax hike or don't you? And interestingly, I don't think either the Senate president nor the Speaker of the House have come out in support of this plan. And I'm sure a lot of that has to do with the fact that they really don't know where their members are going to be on it.
Well, they haven't come out against it either, which Mm-mm. they would have said a year and a half ago. They would have said absolutely no way. But, you know, people don't know about how it's going to affect them yet, but they sure will. you know, as soon as the new election cycle starts.
Yeah, the tax department came out with a chart that shows, you know, low-income people, maybe $30,000 a year income, they're only saving about $26 in this last year with the tax cut. So, yeah, they might not notice. But as you go up the income scale, of course, it's a graduated income tax. So the further up you go, the more people are saving with the tax cut, and the more people are going to get hit if the tax cut is delayed. Families, $100,000 a year, they're saving $178 this year with the tax cut. So that could hit them. And folks above $200,000, $454. Now, those folks might notice when they don't get that $454 tax cut.
They might, but what did you say their income is?
$200,000, of course.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's all relative,
yeah.
I suppose.
And if you're not making $200,000, you say, yeah, go ahead, let them pay it.
Well, Kathy's right. The polls show people didn't know they were getting these income tax reductions. But I guarantee you next year they will know they were supposed to have gotten
sure.
them, particularly in maybe 10 or 12 Ohio House districts. The interesting part is the battle may be in the Ohio House. The Republicans control the Senate 21-12. The Democrats, God bless them, may take over the Senate in the next century. I don't think that will happen. But the House is very close. And if anybody remembers back to the 1984 Senate election, every vote among the Democrats was the 17th vote that made the 90% tax cut possible. And if there's a vote in the House, every Democrat who votes for that tax postponement, it will be called an increase, will be the crucial vote in the 30-second ads that will be used against him or her. So we're just at the beginning of this right now.
So in the Senate, they'll just take their safe votes in the Senate, the ones they're not worried about losing, the Republicans, if they want to pass it.
If they want to do it.
They'll take the safe ones. They'll vote for it. No one can hurt them. No harm, no foul.
That's what I think will happen.
Yeah.
They went along with gambling. People in the Senate, Keith Faber from our Dayton area, he supported it as part of leadership. And as you said, Senator Harris has not come out against this yet. He's been very even-handed, I'd say just as even-handed as Speaker Buttigieg has been.
And Harris's comments, or lack of comments, are just amazing because, as you hinted, and last November, Bill Harris gave a speech to a bunch of State House insiders, and he said something like this: no matter how bad the economy gets, Senate Republicans will not, I repeat, will not do anything to raise taxes. And now he's changing his tone and he's changing his words. He has yet to criticize this proposal from the governor.
But he's not in a vulnerable position either, you know, in terms of elections. So
he can flip-flop on the issue.
It wouldn't be as detrimental as it could be to others.
Some folks have said it, that they had not instituted this gradual tax cut over, 5 years, that we wouldn't be in as much of a fix as we are in anyway.
Wouldn't be in as big of a hole as we are, but according to the supporters of this tax reform, as they call it, tax overhaul, we'd be in worse shape. More companies would be leaving. Fewer companies would be coming. So I don't know if anybody's done a study to balance that out.
And also it's worth noting that, you know, at the time they approved this, no one had any idea the economy was going to nosedive as it has. I mean, so, you know, at the time it seemed like perhaps more, you know, feasible than it does now.
So if there were cuts, Kathy, who would get the hits at this point? Who's vulnerable?
Well, the revenue from the slots was earmarked for primary and secondary education, kindergarten through 12 public schools. So they're saying that would be where it would come from. But, of course, if push came to shove, it could come from any part of the budget, and it's a $50 billion budget. So, but right now, for argument's sake, the talk is that this is going to come out of primary and secondary education. And it's going to affect they're concerned about how it'll affect Ohio's pulling down of federal stimulus money for education, because they have to be spending a certain amount to qualify for that federal aid. Also, Ohio's seeking some race to the top funds from the federal government for education, and that would be put in jeopardy too. But realistically, I mean, they could cut this from anywhere in the budget.
The all-day kindergarten issue, that was going to be one of the first things that would be implemented.
That is the first and only thing in the new education plan that was to be implemented in this current 2-year budget. Interestingly, There's been talk at the State House of if we go along with this tax rollback or delay, can we talk about some other parts of the education plan? And one of the things that they want to talk about is delaying implementation of all-day kindergarten, because there's been a lot of complaints from school districts who say they're not getting money from the state to pay for all-day kindergarten. And, of course, there's some significant cost associated when you consider teachers, classroom space, et cetera. So it'll be interesting when they do finally get around to some serious debate on this, whether or not they reopen the whole education model. And another, I know another senator spoke to me a little bit about cuts in aid to Catholic and non-public chartered schools.
Right.
Concern about, well, let's put that, you know, put that money back in too. So it'll be interesting to see how broad the discussion gets.
One of the problems with cuts, if cuts were made and education was somehow not hurt as bad as it could be, money would have to be transferred from the general fund to education. And that would just magnify and bring up again all the devastating cuts that have already been made to mental health, mental retardation, health care. And this would cause more political problems for Governor Strickland. This discussion would just erupt again.
It feels like he was a three-legged stool. He'd been on one leg right now, because when through that budget process, he just pretty much executed most of his staunch supporters in the human services field. And now if he shoots down, if education has to be harmed, that's another, I guess, another leg. But I guess the third leg, maybe it's all three, is the tax issue.
Absolutely. I mean, the stories that we're hearing now about the impact of cuts on the social services end, mental health, as Bill mentioned, adult and child protective services, you know, there's real people are being harmed in real ways that a lot of Ohioans are not really willing to accept. I mean, it's disturbing to a lot of people.
And libraries, another example where they didn't get cut as hard as they worried. But even though that happened, they're still cutting back their hours.
More library levies on the ballot than ever before in the state of Ohio, I think, isn't it?
You know, it was really not surprising, but worth noting the outpouring of support for public libraries in the state when those cuts were on the table, and just the pushback. I mean, they did just as many rallies and efforts to get that aid preserved as a lot of our social service groups do all the time.
We're going to take a short break. If you have questions or comments about the state budget or state government, give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joining me today, Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch, Bill Cohen of Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and Bill Hershey of the Dayton Daily News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. We'll be right back.
And good morning. You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. 53 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20. Join WOSU Public Media by becoming a volunteer. WOSU's Fall Pledge Drive is coming up, and we need your help. Help to answer calls from WOSU listeners just like you later this month. For more information, including dates and times, visit wosu.org/volunteer. In the weather forecast for today, some sunshine and a high around 60 degrees, a little windy at times, gusty winds of up to 30 miles per hour. Clear skies tonight and a low of 42. Mostly cloudy on Thursday with a chance of afternoon rain and a high of 65. Cloudy with a chance of rain Thursday night as well and a low of 57. Looking ahead to Friday, afternoon rain is likely on Friday and a high of 67 degrees. And now back to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining me in the studio today to hash over state government and political issues is Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch, Bill Hershey of the Dayton Daily News, and Bill Cohen of Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks for being here, guys. If you would like to join the conversation, call us at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Bill Hershey, let's talk about issue three for a minute. What's different here this year than the last 20 years that they've been working to get a gambling issue through the state?
Well, I think a couple things are different. First of all, the economy's worse right now than it was the previous times. I think unemployment is nearly 4% higher than it was just a year ago when a last gambling proposal was defeated. And unemployment is really high, and except for Columbus, which sort of immune to the unemployment that hits Ohio's old industrial cities, Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, and Toledo all would get casinos. The appeal is to voters there to improve their economies, so it's spread all over the state. The campaign seems to be better run than the previous campaigns.
In what way
have been.
Do you think?
They've hired top operatives. They don't give you the impression that they're really, you know, throwing you to the ground and beating you up and saying, here's our casino, you got to take it, although they're doing it in a more subtle way. And they seem to have a response for most of the arguments against having the casinos, except for some of the really salient arguments. Is gambling a bad thing or a good thing for the state? And I think if you think gambling is a bad thing, casinos are bad, those people are still going to vote against it. But the analysis that came out this week from the tax department and the budget department showed that the revenue estimates that the pro-casino people had put out were pretty much on target as long as there are no slot machines. So they haven't exaggerated what they said would happen.
You mentioned the social issues, the social impact. You know, 18 years ago, that was a huge issue. How much money were they going to devote to gambling addiction treatment services and that sort of thing? And now they're like, oh, yeah, 2% will go to that. No big deal. Move on. Next question.
I think one of the problems is that the opposition this time is mainly funded by gambling interests. Mountaineer Gaming in West Virginia, and I don't know that they want to highlight the evils of gambling. The Ohio Council of Churches, the Methodist Church, the Ohio Roundtable do talk about those issues, and I think they're doing it in a grassroots way that you don't see on the airwaves.
I think it's also helped that they've had the FOP endorsing it. They've been real visible on television with ads saying that they support it. Of course, I think a lot of their support comes through the fact that some of the money, the revenues, is going to be earmarked for local governments. And that, of course, pays for their salaries for police and fire protection. But I think there's some people that get some form of confidence or comfort that the FOP is for it this time.
It's and not also, just the local government money. They get $13 million a year in training. And the FOP really does lend legitimacy to their campaign.
And also lending some legitimacy, especially on the jobs issue. You've got the UAW. And the FOP, of course, a police union,
AFL.
And the building trades, the AFL-CIO. These unions represent, even though they're down in membership, they still represent hundreds of thousands of Ohioans, and they're saying they generally believe the job numbers, and even if the job numbers are a little inflated, still tens of thousands of jobs we're talking about, and so they're telling everybody to vote yes.
Where are the business interests when it comes to casinos? I know the service employees union isn't so sure this is necessarily a good thing. And what about the chamber?
I think in Columbus, Kathy probably would know better than I, some of the key business interests are definitely against this. Nationwide Insurance, which has been a prime reason why the Arena District is so successful, has come out against it. Kathy's newspaper, which is a major force here, it's hard to pick the paper up when there's not an anti-gambling, anti-casino editorial. But that's not necessarily the case. In Cleveland, the business interests have been behind this. They see it as a positive thing. Dan Gilbert, one of the key promoters of this, is a majority owner of the Cavaliers. He has a lot of employees in Cleveland with his other businesses. So I think the business community is divided.
The retail merchants, they've come out against it. The store owners. The bar owners, especially, they don't like it. They're worried that the neighborhood bar right down the street and then, you know, the neighborhood restaurant right down the street from the casino is going to lose all their business.
Bob Tenenbaum, the spokesperson for the group that's backing Issue 3, said, well, they've promised that they'll keep the price point inside the casino, which is I don't know how many millions of square feet and how many restaurants they'll have in it, but they'll keep the price point high enough that it won't compete with the other restaurants and bars in the area. In other words, if you want to go get a decent priced beer and a burger, you're going to have to leave the casino to go get it. They promised that. One of the critics of that group says they made a lot of promises, but unless it's etched into stone in the Constitution, which is a lot of detail for a constitutional amendment, but unless it's etched into stone, there's no way to guarantee any of these promises will come true.
I think that's part of the concern that Bill was mentioning is the locations of these casinos, proposed casinos, are in urban centers. And so you're right, there's businesses real close. In the past, we've talked about casinos kind of remote locations more. You know, you'd drive to and you'd spend your time there. You know, if you have a casino in the Arena District, you know, you could be, you know, bar hopping here, there, and pop in there as just as easy. So there may be that concern. But the other point that I wanted to mention was I think that people are starting to feel a little more strongly about the fact that we're losing business to other states. You know, all the casinos in the states around us advertise heavily in Ohio. And many people travel to go visit these casinos. Even if you're someone who doesn't, you know, says you won't use a casino or won't go to a casino, you know people that go to other states. And I think there's a growing kind of recognition of, well, maybe this is better for Ohio to have it here in our state.
It might be, and I think the estimate is $1 billion a year that's mm-hmm. lost to other states. But if we do get these casinos, we won't get the benefits that some of these other states have had. Indiana has strategically placed its, I think it's 13 or 11 casinos on its borders.
Right.
So they draw businesses from customers from Ohio. Our casinos won't do that very much. Maybe Toledo's on the border with Michigan, but Michigan already has casinos
in
Detroit.
Canada.
And even the studies show that most of the Ohio business will come from Ohio. So we'll get some of what we're losing, but we're not going to attract people from other states.
And then you're going to get more of the problems associated with gambling, more divorce, more bankruptcies, more suicides, whatever. That's what the critics point out, that wherever you have a casino, yes, Ohioans are already going to other states to gamble, but there are going to be more Ohioans than ever before are going to gamble if we set them up here. And so you're going to get more bankruptcies, more foreclosures, more people spending their rent money in the casinos when they should be spending it on rent and food and their kids' education. So we're going to have more of the social problems. And the critics are citing these national reports saying that for every $1 we take in, we spend $2 or $3 or more in social costs.
What do we know about the numbers right now? Has there been any recent polling on this?
There have been a couple, I think. One showed 58% support. One showed 59% support. But I would just caution that in past years, there have been times when, you know, polls a month or two out have shown the issue was going to pass. And in the end, the issues went down to defeat. It wasn't even close. I think
right.
The closest it's ever been is 57-43. Most of the time, it's 60-40. And, you know, there's always – the vote no folks always have an advantage. When there's confusion, you get 10 or 15% of the people not sure which way they're supposed to vote, even though they know they're for or against gambling. And they say, well, I better play it safe. I better vote no. So you have that. And just, you know, if you're on the vote no side, you can give 10 arguments why people should vote no. And all you need to do is convince each specific person of one of your arguments. And if they buy one of the vote no arguments, they're probably going to vote no. So the burden is all on the vote yes side. It's a tough burden.
There's the issue that State Representative Lou Blessing was on the show the other day, and he brought up again the issue of the language and how it does not ban cash wagers in Ohio, and that there's no provision in the proposed amendment to tax cash wagers. Therefore, if there are permitted cash wagers and they're not taxed, we're going to lose a whole bunch of money. Has there ever been any validity given to this? Has anyone been able to nail that baby down?
I don't think it's been resolved, and I think the Attorney General, and I may be wrong on this, said there might be a question about it. The supporters have come up with argument after argument and assertion after assertion that cash would be taxed. And when you put cash in a slot machine, you're really buying a token. I don't think it's got the traction that the opponents hoped it would, but I don't think the issue's finally been settled either.
I think the State Tax Department did allude to the idea that they were making their revenue estimate based on the idea that the legislature could, in implementation
right.
legislation, make it perfectly crystal clear, hey, this stuff is all taxed.
Well, that was raised as well. I mean, you know, there's the rulemaking part of anything that's passed on the ballot, and Lou Blessing seemed to think that that wouldn't apply because it was a constitutional amendment. And, you know, I mean, there's always – I tell you that
– I think the boils down to the fact it's all going to court. You know, yeah. All these things. Are, I mean, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars at stake, so definitely these little changes are worth all that, and it's going to be litigated.
But the state's own report, as Bill said, said that it could be taxed through the implementing legislation, and usually the constitutional amendment provides for implementing legislation, which I think this one does.
Education overhaul, we talked about that. But I'm wondering about those new academic standards and how that's panning out. Kathy?
Well, the state, as part of the just-passed budget, the Department of Education and the State Board have been asked to revamp Ohio's curriculum standards that basically tells teachers and parents what the students are expected to learn in each grade. And they want these updated to reflect 21st century skills, kind of the buzzword there. They want students to be able to be good at problem solving and creativity. It's just not about content anymore. They want people to have good reasoning skills. I think the reason, you know, the talk, of course, is that things change so fast today that students need to be able to adapt. So they're working on those. Those are expected to be done. They're supposed to be done by the end of June. And I have not really had much of a look at it. But what's interesting is came up this week is Ohio is participating in a bunch of states. I think 48 states are working together on joint standards. There's a lot of talk that if we really want to measure success, we need to do it in a broader way. And so it'll be interesting to see whether or not Ohio incorporates some of those national standards into our own so we can really see how students here are doing. But there's a concern that the standards aren't rigorous enough, that the expectations aren't high enough on the state level. But there's a lot of resistance on the local level because, you know, if you make the tests and the curriculum too hard, you're going to have a lot more students failing. And that's not acceptable.
It's not acceptable when you're trying to get a levy passed every other year.
It's not.
And we have an email from Rich talking. Speaking of levies, he wonders if wouldn't additional education cuts push districts like Southwestern City Schools into crisis, as if Southwestern isn't already in a crisis. But it does make you wonder about these kinds of issues out there as well. How do they begin to implement them? How do districts like Southwestern even begin to change up something like that?
You know, it's going to be difficult because these things take money. I mean, you want your students to perform better. You've got to make sure your classrooms are small. You've got to make sure your teachers are prepared. And that all takes money. And the problem for local districts right now is the governor has supposedly fixed education funding in Ohio, but none of them feel much better off. None of them feel like they're in a better position than they were. We had, a really interesting letter to the editor recently from a teacher in the Southwestern City School Districts, which, as you mentioned, is really struggling right now after several levies have failed. And she was asking, where's the leadership here? Why hasn't the governor, why hasn't Mayor Coleman, why haven't these leaders spoken out about what's happening to our district and tried to help us? And I understand why they feel that way. It's not hard to see.
I haven't heard any governor ever speak out specifically about a school district before when it comes to levies and that sort of thing. Am I wrong? Has anyone ever heard of the governor doing something like that?
No, I haven't, no. Usually the state school superintendent will encourage everyone to go vote for their local levies.
And that's about it.
Yeah.
Let's take a phone call, Steve. You want to talk about tax cuts and cutting services, and we just talked about Southwestern City Schools getting cut.
Yes. The discussion you were having around the issue of revenues and tax cuts, I just wanted to remind the panel and the audience that back in the 80s when the tax cuts to promote businesses really gained traction, the intent was not only to promote business, but it was also to shrink the size of government. I mean, that was recognized by David Stockman, Reagan's budget czar, and Arthur Laffer, the economist. So, I mean, it's recognized by economists that if you cut a dollar of tax revenue, that you have to cut your spending by something between 65 cents and 80 cents, depending on the economist. So cutting taxes is actually a program to reduce revenue and to force a smaller government.
Okay.
That's my comment.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Well, it has shrunk our government in the last 12 months, has it not? How many people have been cut from the payroll? Do we know?
I thought the Dayton Daily News, actually, I read something about that, and was it maybe about 2,600 state employees we've since the governor's taken office, or something like that?
I think that's since he's taken office.
Yeah, yeah. Since he's taken office. So, and a lot of that has been because of budgetary concerns.
What about that idea that was floated again a couple weeks ago to merge state departments from whatever it is at 22 or 24 down to 11? They did it with Human Services and the Ohio Bureau of Employment Services, and we now have Jobs and Family Services. I don't know if it's any more efficient or not. What do we know?
Well, we know the Republicans in the Senate were pushing that whole idea. They claimed you could take 24 state departments, make them into 11, and you could wind up in the long run getting rid of 11,000 state employees, which would be a lot more than we've already gotten rid of. So, but I think that's pretty that's a long-term kind of savings, and I've even heard supporters admit that in the short term it would actually cost money. And so, therefore, it may not be a solution to this particular thing, although if you want to look forward and say, well, let's try to avoid the next budget mess, you could do it. But the interesting thing, the Senate Republicans, I think, pushed that. They're in the majority there. But I don't remember the House.
The House proposed it this time, and the Senate Republicans pick up on it. Republicans really don't count for very much right now. They're disappointed that the Senate Republicans wouldn't take them up on it. They are really the only group that has proposed an alternative to what the governor and the majorities in the legislature have done.
Yeah, so you could kind of say, well, look, if this is such a great Republican idea, at least pass it in the chamber where you've got the power to pass it, and they haven't done it.
You know, the one combination that you hear more and more about is combining the Department of Education with the Ohio Regents. So making like one education department K through, you know, graduate school. And you do hear talk about that. And they're, the Regents isn't a really big department. And they're, and you are seeing the state superintendent and this Eric Fingerhut with the Regents working together more and more. And I can kind of envision the day, although I'm not really sure that's to save money as much as it is to have a seamless education system.
Okay.
But that's the one I hear the most about.
We're going to have to take another short break. We're talking about the state budget and all kinds of other troubles with Bill Cohen of Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Bill Hershey of the Dayton Daily News, and Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org to join the conversation. We have some calls and emails waiting as I speak. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Michael Chabon, author of The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay and the Yiddish Policeman's Union, talks about being a father and a husband. His new collection of personal essays is called Manhood for Amateurs. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in just about 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning. I'm Amy Jurevich, 54 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1140. You can get more radio and less fundraising. The WOSU Fall Membership Drive begins in just a few days, and we have only $9,000 left to raise before October 15th to get one pledge-free day during the drive. Get more programming and less fundraising. Visit WOSU.org/pledge-free to make your gift now. That's WOSU.org/pledge-free. And thank you for your support. In the weather forecast for today, some sunshine and a high around 60 degrees, a little windy at times with gusts of up to 30 miles per hour. Clear skies tonight and a low of 42. For Thursday, mostly cloudy with a chance of afternoon rain and a high of 65. Thursday night, cloudy with a chance of rain and a low of 57. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to our Statehouse panel discussion on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about government affairs. You have questions or comments, email us at allsides@wosu.org or call us at 614-292-8513. And Ed, you want to talk about that idea of consolidating departments. What do you have to say? You're on the air.
Well, my comment about things is that on the one hand, the Republicans have been in power for years and they keep saying that they want to cut government and cut taxes, and they've cut taxes, but they haven't really cut government. And at the same time, if they want to consolidate these departments and lay off 11,000 employees, and I realize that may be a long-term thing, none of the programs that they've said that are supposed to help business increase in the state of Ohio has actually worked. And what are we going to do with a scaled-down state budget to support these 11,000 people and their families that they plan to lay off? Where are they going to work? And that just means more strain on the state budget. I think the Republicans are trying to have it both ways, and that the governor and the Democrats really need to go on the offensive and say, hey, you people need to pay attention. It's more than just tax cuts. It's services. What do you want out of your state government? And I don't think the Republicans have really spelled that out.
Okay, Ed, thanks for your call. That is a good question. When you lay off, these are good-paying jobs. State government jobs tend to be well-paying jobs, and when you lay them off, you have a new unemployed person competing for all the other jobs out there. What do you think?
I think it's true. I think he's absolutely right. I mean, people lose their job, and then, you know, you hear stories about at the county, you know, the state cut a lot of aid to local governments and a lot of county job and family service agencies, local caseworkers have lost their jobs. Protective services caseworkers at the local level, at the county level, have lost their jobs. And those people are now drawing unemployment.
The caller makes a good point, but he should have said or could have said Governor Strickland didn't take the course that he prescribed. In fact, if you didn't know what his party label was and you listened to Governor Strickland, you'd think he was a Republican. He has not made the case for spending to keep these social services that Kathy talked about that have been reduced. Instead, during the past year and a half, he's been touring the state touting his education plan, which so far sounds great, but where's the beef, I guess, going back? He has chosen not to do this. He could have stormed the state. It would have been a high-risk game, saying, I need to hold the line on these tax cuts because we have to protect services for people. He chose not to do that, and it's a little bit late. Maybe that is what he's going to do now.
Yeah, we have an email from Robert. He says, if I were Governor Strickland, I would have not gone the route of casinos and slots. Of course, the governor went with the slots to try to balance the budget, and I would have gone straight to an appeal to the voters about tax revenue and gone over the head of the two parties who are very much anti-new taxes. But that would have taken courage, and who has political courage nowadays in Ohio? And if Governor Strickland wasn't going to do it, who the heck is?
No, that's the whole thing. No one. And there was a lot of push behind the scenes encouraging the governor and legislative leaders to come together, hold hands, and jump and do a temporary sales tax increase to blunt some of these cuts. And they couldn't get any agreement. They wouldn't come together. Whether all or some opposed, I don't know. But in the end, that no one was willing to go along with it, nor was the governor willing to step out on his own.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as he put his finger to the wind, that all was hushed.
Well, he knows all governors, going back to Mike DeSalle, at least that I know about, have raised taxes. Republicans, however, are much better at exploiting the tax issue to their advantage and to the Democrats' disadvantage. And Governor Strickland knows this. He got burned himself when he voted for President Clinton's tax increases when he was in Congress. He lost. He doesn't want to lose again. I don't know if he will or not, but I know that Republican John Kasich, his likely opponent, is not calling this a postponement of tax increases. He's calling it a tax increase already. So the governor probably is getting ready to be attacked next year as a tax hiker.
How much do you think it matters to people, though, because someone like John Kasich, he has not proposed any alternative either.
He hasn't, but he's not a he's not in office right now.
He's not in office.
As we get closer to the election, he's going to have to make some proposals other than vaguely saying we want to do away with the income tax over time and we want to abolish the estate tax. I mean, those are two things he has talked about.
Yeah, Bill, you make a good point. Kasich has gone beyond talking about this short-term mess. He's been saying for months, oh, let's wipe out the entire state income tax. That brings in like 35 or 40% of all the money to state coffers. And when asked, okay, fine, that you want to propose that. Now, how is state government going to get along without all that money? What's your alternative? He's been totally silent.
He says, make me governor and I'll show you how.
Well, basically, that's what he said so far. I think he said, well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, or don't worry, at some point I'll tell you. But, you know, the closer we get to the election, the more people say, hey, that's a question you need to answer.
People seem so distanced from what their taxes pay for anymore. They don't understand what things cost. Or they just flat out do understand it and they don't like it. Do you think the state's done a good job of educating people about what they're getting, how much bang they're getting for their buck?
No. In a word, no. I don't think people realize how much of the budget is kind of untouchable in ways that debt retirement, Medicaid costs that the federal government requires us to pay, prison costs that, if you touch that. I mean, when you talk about what really is at play and what you can really talk about in terms of cuts, I don't think people realize how much of the budget's kind of off hand.
Actually, the one part of government that has done a pretty good job of trying to educate people is the federal government, because you see these signs now saying this road improvement paid for with the federal bailout money. I don't think it says bailout money. It says National Stabilization
Whatever the term is, one of the problems with state government is it's remote from people, not intentionally, but they know where they're school money comes from, or they think they do. They don't know that 50% of it comes from the state. They know that their trash gets picked up by the city government. They know that the federal government is fighting the war in Afghanistan and they're paying for that. But state government's sort of out there. It's almost invisible. Medicaid, people associate that with their local or county governments. That's where they
or
go the down to see people.
Right.
Or the federal government.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a tough sell.
I wonder how much that's on purpose sometimes, how much of it is the less they can blame them for. You know, the drunken driving laws, those aren't local. Those aren't enacted locally. They're enacted at the state level and they're affect people every single day.
There's lots of examples like that, but I don't think it's on people's radar as much as what their local government's doing. Because they see that and experience that every day.
And you talk to these state legislators, they're always getting calls from people saying, I want you to vote for that national health care plan or against it, or I want you to end the war in Iraq. And they have to explain, this is not Congress. That's Washington. This is the Ohio House, the Ohio Senate. A lot of people just don't get it.
You know, I had a woman, I called on some people that participated in a poll, and it was about how good they thought the president was doing, how he was handling his job, Obama. And she blamed him for the cuts in the libraries, that her library was closing on Sundays, and she was upset with President Obama about that. Now, of course, that's state government, but a lot of people just don't get it.
It's everything
it's
trickles
a lot
down.
To understand, yeah.
Speaking of trickling down, the bottom of the barrel, let's talk about poverty and how the budget cuts are going to impact local services. You already said a lot of caseworkers have been laid off and that sort of thing. But these are the safety net things. These are the things that keep people from falling through the cracks, keep our society from falling apart.
Well, there's a lot of concern about mental health services. One of the things that you're seeing is group homes are closing. Funding to group homes for mentally disabled adults. Where are those folks going? It turns out some of those folks are ending up in nursing homes, where some mental health advocates worry that they're not getting the treatment that they should in that setting, that they're not equipped. Protective services is another good example. Child abuse, child neglect. Many counties have laid off half their staffs or more. I know several counties that have abolished their adult protective services departments. So people who feel that a senior may be being exploited by a caretaker or something, those calls are now being routed to the county sheriff's office. I'm not really sure what the county sheriff's going to do about it if, you know.
Well, they're busy issuing eviction notices for all the foreclosures.
There you go. So, I mean, I could go on. I mean, adoption services, there's state cuts there. People that are going to their local job and family services to sign up for food stamps and all these other services that are available are finding that they can't get in to see caseworkers. Maybe they wait a week, maybe more. If you go to some of our local job and family services offices here in the Columbus area, you'll see long lines. So it's affecting people. You know, the safety net services are still there, but they're harder to access for a lot of people.
This isn't an argument that our lawmakers make to folks when they tell them about what the cuts are going to – what they're gonna hurt. You don't hear about it that often.
No, you hear about it from all the advocates that come in and testify and line
well,
up.
You hear about it from the advocates, but Bill made a good point. The public library cut affected lots of people, not mm-hmm. just people at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale. And the better educated, wealthier people were organized.
Right.
They came in and they listened to the legislators, listened to them. I guess they knew they were all voters, or they probably knew some of them, and that makes a difference.
Yeah. Let's switch gears completely and talk about lethal injection for just a minute, because there was a problem when they tried to execute somebody a couple weeks ago. Now it's created – they stopped the execution. They halted it. Now it's going to go into November, that particular one. But in the meantime, they want to retalk the whole issue. What? Why?
Well, I think what you're talking about is we had a – the state made an effort to execute someone who was on death row and couldn't. They had trouble finding a vein. So now that execution's been halted. I think the governor has since halted two more, so it's not likely we're going to see any executions in Ohio this year. And it's raising, I think, for one of the first time, a significant discussion about our policy of executing someone. And I think what you might see come of this is changes in how we carry that out and ultimately a postponement in any executions for a while.
How much can we change it? What's the alternative?
That's what's being studied now, different ways to inject the drugs into the person who's being executed. I think there was talking about putting in his or her, only his so far, muscle. But these are medical decisions that they have to, and they may not be able to use the same kind of people to administer the drugs. These are, I believe, are emergency medical people now who are well trained in what they do.
Yeah.
So I don't know how long this review is going to take. Maybe somebody else does.
Of course, the anti-death penalty people are seizing this and saying, okay, this shows you can't really humanely execute. And of course, they say, we've been saying this for decades, you can't really humanely execute someone, so therefore just call off all the executions. But in general, I think a majority of state legislators feel that their constituents, in general, still support the death penalty for these extreme cases, and that's mainly who's getting executed. And we're seeing fewer and fewer death penalties being handed down in recent years. So after this 150 or 200 folks on death row, after they are eventually executed over the next several years, there probably is going to be a waning of executions. But I think in general, legislators say their constituents generally support capital punishment for the most heinous crimes, and they're not in the mood yet to abolish it.
There's already a backlash against the delay. Some people say, well, I don't care how inhumane it is. Stick him 24 more times. And I'm not sure that's the majority of opinion, but that is certainly a well-defined group of people don't care how the execution is carried out. And the problem with that is the opponents of this would say it lowers us to the level of the people who are being executed, the type of crimes that they committed. But this is a debate that just is endless.
You're not going to see – I don't think you're going to see anything other than lethal injection when all this is done. I think what you're going to see is there's going to be maybe a backup policy when medical technicians have difficulty finding veins in an individual, maybe how long they can try, how many times they can poke, and then what, and coming up with some kind of backup policy. That's my sense of where it's headed.
We've already abolished the electric chair because that was thought to be too danger prone. There were a couple cases, or at least one, where someone started sparking, I think. People don't want that to happen again.
Well, partly back then, was it 2003? I think that they said that they wanted to cut it because it was upsetting, or eliminate that as an option because it was upsetting to the employees who have to carry it out. And they are all volunteers still. It's an all-volunteer force.
It's a difficult discussion. I mean, the more you talk about it, the more you remind people just, of what the state's doing. It's a difficult discussion.
It's an interesting one. What else is on the table down at the State House? What are people talking about besides money? Taxes, gambling.
Well, payday loans. You know, we went through that big thing last year. The legislature said, these rates that they're charging on these two-week loans are usurious and we're going to crack down. And then even the voters got a say. And the voters said, yeah, we agree. It's usurious. We got to cut down that 391% annual rate, make it 28%. Well, the payday loan stores switched gears, went to a couple other models that are in state law.
Well, they say state lawmakers told them to do it.
Yes, they did. And so they said, fine, we're going to charge 28%. And then, this law doesn't say anything about us not charging fees. So we're going to charge a $15 origination fee. We're going to charge a $10 credit check fee. And if you want your money in cash for the first time, we're going to start charging you a $15 check cashing fee. So in some cases, we're going to charge you almost as much as we charged you last year. Now, if you don't cash the check and you just take the check away, you will be getting a better deal than last year. But now some legislators are going, this is outrageous. I can't believe they got around our new law, and we're going to try to crack down again. But it looks like this crackdown number two is going to have less support than the crackdown number one last year that Republicans and Democrats alike voted for.
There may be an effort to crack down on cell phone text messaging by drivers, too. This is one area where maybe there could be some agreement between the Democrats in the House and the Republicans in the Senate. There's half a dozen bills on this. I don't think any hearings have been held, but it's an issue that if you talk to regular people, they're upset about, and maybe the legislators will get that message.
The lawmakers commute a lot, though. This has always been a tough one for them to go along with because they're all doing it. They're all doing it, so I don't.
Or their staffs.
If they do it, I will be kind of surprised, honestly.
Well, it was said that that's what held back. You know, they wanted to ban cell phone use while you're driving, and that's why they put the kibosh on that back three or four years ago. Well, listen, we're running out of time. Thank you very much, Kathy Kandisky from the Columbus Dispatch, for being here today, and Bill Cohen from the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, and Bill Hershey from the Dayton Daily News. Appreciate you coming in. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus. And streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.